from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM. The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's Ihsan Higgins here with the Legal Hour. We're doing the Legal Hour tonight before the Leadership Hour. So, I just want to greet the listeners very warmly. And, of course, my guests, my normal guest tonight, I have with me Faisal Bardin. Assalamu alaikum, Faisal.
Wa alaikum salam, Ihsan, and all the listeners of VOC.
And Nazir just sent me a message now. He's running 5 minutes late. And when he says 5 minutes, I'm sure he just left home. But, I mean, I'm hoping he's going to be soon. But tonight we're talking marriage, partnerships, and property battles. And this is because, I've had quite a few inquiries about ladies who's worked all their life. They've contributed to the bond. They were married. The husband had the house in their name. And now, when there's a divorce or there's a problem, the lady has absolutely nothing in her name, but she has contributed. And the normal response, during this space of divorce is that the husband says, yeah, because he maybe paid the bond, but she paid for everything else. She paid the electricity, she bought the food. She made the food, she cleaned the house, she raised the children. She did all those things, but at the end of the day, her name was not attached to the house. So tonight we're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about a situation where people are only married Islamically, but they are 50-50 owners of the house. And what you do in that situation when there's a divorce. And I'm sorry that it's always about divorce, and it sounds very negative. But I think people, even if you are happily married, you must always look at what could potentially happen. And it's not just about divorce. It could potentially also be about the death of your loved one. And then what do you do in respect of the property? So tonight we're looking at some of those issues, and Nazir will join us soon. But Faisal, maybe just quickly, the topic is marriage and partnerships. So maybe we must just give a definition of a partnership, and especially in relation to two people or three people or four people deciding to buy a property. Normally they don't register a company for that purpose. They just put it in their own names. Just take us through that quickly.
Yeah, in the true sense of a partnership, if people think of a partnership, they think of a business. They think of people getting together. Forming a partnership is a document you sign in respect of a business. And, what does each partner do? One partner maybe contributes the cash, and the other partner maybe contributes the expertise. So that are people normally think of a partnership. Other than that, when it comes to immovable property, you have a situation when the husband and wife, enters into an agreement whereby they purchase the property. And if they purchase the property in both their names, they then are forming a partnership in respect of that property. So in that instance, it's also a partnership. They might not think of it in that way, or they might not record a partnership agreement regarding that asset. And that is where maybe one of the problems lie, because it's not recorded in the sense of the fact that both parties own the property. They don't maybe stipulate who's responsible for the rates, who's responsible for the maintenance, who's responsible for the bond. Those issues are not...
So you're saying that it ought to be in a type of a partnership agreement, even if it is husband and wife?
Yes, they should clarify exactly, what roles each party plays when they enter into this agreement, when they purchase this property. Now, many a times I think it could be an oral agreement. They go, they buy the property. They register a bond on the property. Each party, so strictly speaking, each party is supposed to be liable for 50% of the expenses and entitled to 50% of the income, you know, and that's how you're supposed to split it 50-50 down the line. But when it comes to a family, it's a bit difficult in the sense of, you know, my husband might say, well, I'll cover the bond, you cover
all the disposable expenses.
Yeah, you know, that type of thing. There might be that type of arrangement in place, and sometimes it's not even, you know, discussed. As such, and that makes it more
because
and more
I mean, there's of course marital bliss at the beginning when Amal is happy and you know that nothing can go wrong. But the assumption must always be, you know, I need to protect myself. You know, they must tie your camel, and a lot of people forget about tying that camel when they are in the confines of marriage.
I think they must also look at it as a financial transaction, because you're buying an asset, you have to pay for the asset, you are contracting with the bank in raising a mortgage bond, and the bank looks at both parties jointly or severally. So, you know, in that respect, you need to, you know, protect yourself.
Yeah, look, I've had a situation very recently where husband and wife got married. Wife was working at a normal insurance company, and husband was working in the bank. Husband could get a preferential interest rate if he obviously buys the house on his own, and which he does. And they buy this house, and they live very happily ever after for about 10 years, until the husband then loses his job. And then, of course, you know, poverty came in by the back door, and suddenly they were not so happy anymore. And then, of course, the wife wanted out. And the husband obviously was a bit depressed. He didn't even want to work anymore. He was just sitting at home. And when she said, look, let's sell the house and we each go our own separate way, he says, well, it's my house and why should I, you know, give you anything? Mm. And they ended up in the interdict court, you know, for, you know, at least about 5-6 times they were there. It was extremely ugly. Now the wife is installed in the house, and the husband has an interdict against him that he can't go to his own house. Mm. So now he's going to obviously have to do a whole lot of legal shenanigans in order to get him his rights back. You know, and that's when Nazir comes. In fact, I just heard the bell. Now I'm assuming that's him. He will be talking to us about appointing a receiver in cases where a husband... Well, in this case, in that particular case, it's a situation whereby the woman would have a right to maybe claim a universal partnership, and in that we get her 50%.
But just as far as, you know, once you take that step into the legal action, you must understand that the legal action step, whether it is appointing a receiver, whether it is getting interdicts and things like that, you start with your legal costs. The legal costs can escalate at a phenomenal rate, especially if you're sitting in the High Court, especially if you know, doing an application in the High Court. You know, the costs, you know, it's phenomenal. And people don't realize how expensive it is. Mm. It's very expensive to litigate.
Yeah, look,
So what I'm trying to say is, before you go that step, it is maybe wise then to, you know, sit down. If you can't sit down together, get a mediator and then look at the issue of the property. And if you cannot afford to keep that property, it is maybe a good idea then to look at, you know, parting with that property and at least getting something out of that that transaction, whereby you sell that asset, you settle all your debt, especially if your bond is in arrears and your rates is in arrears and all that. Get rid of that debt, and then, you know, get the change, whatever the change is, and then start afresh. Mm. But if you're going to be fighting, and you sell it, then at the end of that fight, I can guarantee you that change is going to be much less.
Yeah, no, look, the bottom line is, I mean, lawyers are charging, I mean, lawyers, that's obviously a bit senior, they're charging anything between 1,700 and 2,500 rand an hour. And, I mean, people can't even afford one consultation, let alone taking it into litigation. I mean, the cheapest advocate today charges about 17,000 rand a day.
You have to pay your attorney and advocate.
And you must still pay the attorney. So you're looking at about 25,000 rand a day in court. And sometimes these disputes are complicated. And you'd spend 3 or 4 days. By the time you get your change, you're going to get nothing.
And the receiver must be paid as well.
And the receiver gets paid. But Nazir will take us through that a bit later. I'm getting a whole lot of messages through here, and I will read it out. I just need to get a sense from the technician how many minutes we got left before we must give over for Maghrib. And he's looking, but it's fine.
Maybe we can tackle...
Only 2 minutes left.
Maybe a short question that we can maybe tackle there. Maybe get rid of one or two questions.
Yeah. Look, I just want to firstly greet Nazir. Assalamu alaikum, Nazir.
Wa alaikum salam, Ihsan, Faisal, and to the rest of the VOC listeners.
You broke the law now, Nazir, because you probably drove from Cravenby till here within 5 minutes.
Ihsan, funny enough, I was actually driving already when I sent you that text, but I heard what you had to say.
So you were listening. Yeah, but we're glad you're here safely, Nazir. So, yeah, is there any questions?
So Nazir, you still broke the law. You checked your text while you were driving, so...
Audio text.
So you pleaded not guilty to the first charge, but you certainly admitted to the second charge.
That's less of the two.
Okay, so... The Faisal, it's long questions. I don't think we're going to be able to do justice to it. It's not. I'm going to read it quickly, and then after we've read it, we can hand over and we can go make Maghrib and we come back and we'll deal with it. I'll read it again. The first one is here. It says, Salam, Ihsan, and Faisal, and everyone. My ex and I got divorced like 7 years ago. The property is on both our names. He still lives in the house, and I still pay towards the bond. It comes with my banking account, but I don't have any pleasure of the house. Can I legally say that he has no right over the house? Or what is my options now? He lives there, pays the rates, and that's it. But for the sake of the kids, I don't want to sell the house. But what is the best option for me that he don't benefit too much from it? Please advise, Kanala. That's the one thing. And the second one is a couple divorced about 15 years. They have no contact since. However, the house is still on his name. She pays all the bills. She always has what are her rights, and he won't sign the house over. And then the last one I'm going to read. Mr. Higgins, the pardon, what gives the court the right to evict a homeowner from his rightfully, legally acquired home and make the owner homeless? Okay, that's obviously within the realm of evictions, but we will try to deal with it as well.
Live from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape.
Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We are back with the Legal Hour. I've got Faisal Pardin here with me, and I've got Nazir Parker, and we're talking about marriage, and we're talking about partnerships, and also what happens, you know, if people fight with in respect of the house. So we call it a property battle. Just on a totally off topic, as somebody just sent a message now. I mean, they're supposed to send in questions, and we've got a lot of that, but somebody sent a very interesting one. It said that Cheslin Colby is Sufanach, I answered say missed calls. So, it's a bit of a lighter moment, you know, in this dark topic of divorce. Yeah, but anyway, coming back to the questions.
Let's start from number one again.
Let's go to the first one, yes. It says, yeah, my ex and I got divorced like 7 years ago. The property is on both our names. He still lives in the house, and I still pay towards the bond. It comes off my banking account, and I don't have any pleasure of the house. Can I legally say that he has no right over the house? And what is my options now? He lives there, pays the rates, and that's it. And for the sake of my kids, I didn't want to sell the house. But what is the best option for me? that he don't benefit too much from it. Please advise.
I don't know if you said that the house was in both their names.
Yeah, that's the first thing, that the property is both their names. So it's exactly what we spoke about earlier. It's a partnership, yeah. It's on both their names. So even though they are divorced, there's a 50-50 split there, I'm assuming. When I go with the first in Nazir, you can maybe just tackle the latter part.
Yeah, look, if you're in that situation, you're not getting any joy or benefit from the house by not living in the house, and obviously, you know, you're coming short, and you're paying the bond, he's paying the rates, and obviously the bond amount is normally much more than what the rates amount on the property is. So if in that partnership whereby a property is owned and you cannot sit down and have perhaps a meeting of a mediator to try and resolve the situation.
Faisal, let me just say, you know, that before you even talk about mediator, you know, people must first try to have a conversation, you know, normal conversation without the assistance.
We're assuming they've passed that stage.
Okay.
However, if you haven't, then yes, you need to first sit down and talk, make your figures. Now, if one party makes sums and figures and the other party makes more figures, always not the same figures that they come to, and that's fine. That's fine if you come up with different figures, that's fine. But that's a starting point. And you start from that point and now you try to reach that middle road. And if you can't reach that middle road between yourselves, then get help, get a mediator, get somebody who understands, you know, this this calculations that we are talking about, and somebody who is going to be fair and is going to be, you know, try and assist you in reaching your resolution to that. If that fails, the mediator or the uncle or the, you know, brother or sister or somebody independent who's going to try and mediate, if that fails, and then we come to the application, which Nazir can speak about a bit more, is the High Court application where you appoint somebody who's going to take that role.
Faisal, just stop there for a second before we get to that drastic step. There is a thing in here where the woman says, for the sake of my kids, I didn't want to sell the house. So the assumption would be that that's one of the factors, you know, that maybe that...
Look, I mean, if she don't want to sell the house, she wants to keep the house as an investment, but she still has to deal with the person who's living in the house.
Mm.
So if you're keeping the house, you then have to sit down and say, okay, I want to keep the house, I'll continue paying the bond, but let me buy your share, you know, and then I know I'm paying the bond, and the person who's staying there in the house must pay a rent. If he doesn't want to pay a rent, then she has to get somebody else who can pay a rent, if she wants to keep the house.
Okay, Nazir, what is your take on it?
Well, I just want to take the point of Faisal made now a little bit further. She's already lost out on 7 years at least of a benefit of a rental, and chances are that's just going to continue until she takes the necessary steps. If it comes to the liquidation of the asset, then and all these steps that Faisal's mentioned now doesn't work, then the only alternative would be to go and approach a High Court for an independent individual such as a receiver to be appointed and to then liquidate the asset.
Okay, but now let's just go through, before you go through that particular process, and as Faisal said earlier on, it's a very expensive process, and you must basically pay the legal fees, attorney, advocate, and receiver.
That's right.
So there's three different parties that need to be paid. And the trauma, of course. So the first step would be, if one must just now summarize, is one, she should actually have a meeting with her ex and say, listen, this can't go on. We must make a decision. There's three options here. One is we either sell it, or you buy me out, or I buy you out. Is that the three, Faisal?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Okay. Okay, now let's assume for a second that he's reasonable and he's saying, okay, that's fine. He'll go with one of the options, or he goes with none of the options. Now, I just want to deal with one more thing. It says, because she made mention of for the sake of the kids. There's also the fourth option of transferring the property into a name of a trust. And so maybe we'll just deal with that quickly.
Yeah, Sean, if there's already a trust that's been established, then the parties can...
But you can register a trust in pursuance of it.
Yeah, we can register a new trust. The parties can then make the decision that they want to transfer the interest to the trust. The trust will then become the owner of the property, and the children will then be cited as the
beneficiaries.
And perhaps the two parents can be appointed as the trustees. So
the question of the trust is still, who's going to pay the expenses? Who's going to pay the bond? And who's going to pay the rates? Who's going to pay the maintenance? And all those things
Imagine if you're going to transfer it to a trust, the bank is going to want to see settlement of the bond in the personal names, and the trust is going to have to register a new bond. So,
So
there's all of those.
So there's still the financial aspect. Yeah. So that is a route you can go. Mm. But don't go blinding that route without discussing the finances.
Yes. That is why it's very important in a case like this that somebody definitely needs to take legal advice. Look at those four options, which is the most viable. And she also says, look, the question, the last part of it, she says, and what's the best option that you don't benefit too much? So let's say the call is already careful. There is a divorce order. So if the court order says that the property must be split between the parties, then there's nothing she can do about that. So I think we've now solicited Hypert is not doodgeslaan. And I'm hoping if that lady wants to take this further, she's welcome to contact the legal cafe or any of the attorneys sitting here in the studio. Bearing in mind, you know, then it's not free time anymore. It's free time now. But so thank you for that very interesting question. The next one, Faisal, we spoke. Couple divorced for about 15 years. They have no contact since. However, the house is on his name. She pays all the bills. She always hires. What are her rights if he won't sign over the house?
So the house is in his name?
No.
Is that what you said?
Yes, it's in his name.
In his name, but she's paying all the bills.
Yes, yeah.
And they divorced for 15 years?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming
that he doesn't stay in the house. She stays in the house, but the house is in his name.
Oh, okay. Mm. But it's not said there.
That
would make sense because why would you be paying, you know, staying in the house?
That's what I'm saying. The assumption would be she's staying in the house. But let's assume for a moment that she is in the house. He's obviously gotten married again. He's moved on. But he doesn't want to sign the house over to her.
So there she would have to make an... if she's not the co-owner, she has to make an offer to purchase the property from him because, I mean, you can't now... deal with it in a divorce because they divorced already for the last 15 years. So if she wants to keep the house, she has to acquire the house.
Yeah, but the thing is, look, they are divorced for 15 years. She's saying she's staying in the house. He's remarried with grown-up kids, so the assumption was correct.
Maybe if I can just come in there. Funny enough, I have a situation similar to this that I'm handling at the moment. What we've done was we've basically put in a claim for unjustified enrichment. In this case, there might be a divorce order that stipulates certain things. Mm-hmm. But in my situation, I'm dealing
with... Nazir, once again, I'm going to make an assumption, and maybe I want the listener to rectify me on the assumption. My assumption that they were only married Islamically.
In that case, maybe
your conjectio is... let me not speak Latin. Maybe your unjustified enrichment is correct.
Yes, that's what we've done because our parties weren't married. They were just in a relationship. He's gone off overseas and our client was left paying the bills of the bond.
So that's
actually settled the bond.
Not a claim to the house. She can't,
right.
Yeah.
So she's brought a claim for unjustified enrichment, but it's also kind of mixed with the declarator to declare her.
What was the declarator?
To declare her the lawful owner of the property, given that she's been servicing the bond for many, many years.
So in her case, she could possibly also do that. It's an expensive process, though.
It is. Unfortunately, we've had to approach the High Court, and it's one of those things.
So let's look at the unjustified enrichment. That's not necessary for the High Court. You can actually go to the match court with that.
Yeah, depending on the value.
But the declarator, you're going to have to go for the High
That's
Court.
Right.
Because only the High Court can make such a decision.
That's right.
So, look, maybe that's a good option for her. Faisal, what do you think? To go for the unjustified enrichment?
Yeah, because, you know, like I said, she can't go to court and say she owns half of the house. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be a bit of a long shot, but I think the unjust...
There's a few long shots in here. I can think of a few long shots, but at the end of the day, If her problem is that he simply doesn't want to sign the house over, but her tenure in the house is not affected. In other words, he's not saying move out or you know, get out. I would actually say to this lady, don't break something. I mean, don't fix something that is not broken. Because it may be that he doesn't want to sign the house over to you, but he may not want to evict you. And if he evicts you, then you approach a lawyer. And all those defenses that Nazir actually mentioned and Faisal mentioned can actually be your defenses in respect of an eviction order or claim. Yeah. So yeah, that's your choice at the end of the day. But don't go waste unnecessary monies on lawyers. We are back with the Legal Hour. I've got Faisal Bardin and Nazir Parker, both attorneys, and we're discussing some of the issues that are arising out of marriage, partnerships, and of course the house. Who gets it? Who gets the movables? Who gets the pension funds? All that type of things. And it's not a topic that, you know, that we can exhaust in one sitting. I think we're obviously going to take this a little bit further because it's just become almost an epidemic where people are actually fighting over property, they're fighting over everything. And the one thing they failed to do was to actually look at the financial situation even before the marriage, during the marriage, and of course when things go sour. People do not actually put pen to paper. Now, if pen was put to paper, no problems. You know, there will be, I mean, if even the questions that we had now, you know, if people had a proper record of what they envisage for the future, then of course, you know, they won't have these problems. But I guess that's why there's lawyers, and lawyers can possibly sort these things out. But our mission is to actually limit your expenditure in respect of legal fees, you know, so that you know what to do without having to go for an expensive consultation. So here's another question. The question is, Alam Hussain, my sister's daughter was married by Muslim rights and now got a fasakh from a husband who works in Saudi Arabia. He hasn't worked for the last 7 years. There's a property involved which is in her name. She wants him to move out, but he don't want to move. What can she do about it to get him out? She pays all the bills, like bond rates, water, electricity, please advise. So I'm assuming this property is in South Africa, and her husband works in Saudi Arabia. So, but now, what I don't understand is she wants him to move out, but he's in Saudi Arabia, then he hasn't moved out. Anyway, maybe she can just clarify that for us, and I'm going to move to the next question, and then please just clarify that for us. There's a few. Oh, no, yeah, no, she's busy now clarifying it, but yeah, let's just go. Someone just made a comment here. People don't fight over kids anymore. It's all about the dog and the cat when they get divorced. That's, sometimes it's true. No. You see, now this is where, you know, wording gets out of. She made the small error here. She said, Fasa from her husband, she works in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, so if she just had to clarify.
So she works in Saudi.
She just had to put a full stop there. So one full stop can cause a whole lot of confusion.
Yeah, and he lives
here. She works in Saudi, he lives here, and he's in the property. Now it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. Mm.
Yes. Nazir, when I have the first bite.
Well, it's Ihsan, if she is the registered owner of the property, she has the right to bring an application for the husband's eviction.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to first of all have to cancel his lawful occupation through a written letter to him. And once that is done, she needs to give him a time period of at least 30 days to move. If he doesn't move after that, she needs to bring an eviction application either out of the magistrate's court or out of the high court. And in the application, she'll have to state certain things, and the case will be set down for hearing, and hopefully she will be getting an eviction order.
I just want to, I'm reading it again now, and I'm just realizing now she says here that she got a fasakh from her husband. She can't get a fasakh from her husband. She must get a talak from her husband. So I'm assuming that was done. A fasakh is what the woman does, you know, with the authorities. So I mean, they're not married anymore, so, I mean, she can bismillah. So
yeah,
all
she can bring the application, she's got the right and title to do it.
Well, yeah.
If If he's not a co-owner, if there's no agreement in place, if there's, you know, normally those issues do come out. If there's other issues out there, which could hinder the application. So, but those issues, you know, you need to instruct your attorney to do the application, give him all the facts so that he can put it before the court. Don't hold back. You know, you need to be forthwith in your founding affidavit, yeah.
Nazir, how long will it take to get him evicted?
Sean, depending on which court, it could take, I would say the average time now to get an eviction order ranges between 3 months to 6 months. Depending on which court she issues the papers out of. Normally the High Court these days are more efficient in the eviction application, so I'd say in the High Court reasonably within 2 months to
Nazir,
3 months.
Can I just stop you there for a moment? There's been a judgment about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, where the judges have been instructed by the judge president to penalize attorneys for bringing a matter in the High Court, whereas the Match Court could have dealt with it.
I'm aware of that.
So if you're aware of that, so rather not advise people in that direction, because they might end up with a hefty cost order against them for bringing being in the wrong forum. Faisal, wanted to mention something?
Yeah, look, I think the people has been going to the, trying to go to the High Court, you know, to get a quicker hearing, you know, and get a quicker eviction date, etc. But like you said, I mean, you could find yourself in hot water.
Yeah, forum shopping is frowned upon nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you might get the wrong judge on that day, and you know, you waste a lot of court money in the High Court. So,
no, go through the normal channels.
Go through the normal channels. You know, in the Match Courts, deal with it. We deal with a lot of evictions in the Match Court. So, you know, and I've received some very thorough judgments, which is, you know, written by magistrates. So there is competent people sitting in magistrates' courts. But unfortunately, you know, they are busy, so it does take a bit of time.
Yeah, so it seems a big trend here, and I don't know if I've got it wrong, but it seems like, you know, when the husband loses his job, you know, then of course it's trouble in paradise, you know, it's, and I mean, it's not easy nowadays to get employment. So, I mean, once again here, you know, if these people, who now wrote in about, you know, the husband not working and therefore this and that and the other, if they had to have a contract in place up front, they could have looked at some of these eventualities. And I mean, look, of course it's frustrating, you know, having to support someone that is maybe not even making an effort to get the job. But once again, it could have been, these things can become you know you could deal with it. And then, of course, some people giving some advice pertaining to the Fasakh, and well, that's shukran for that. And I'm not sure why this person mentions the fact that, you know, did she observe an Iddah period? I don't think that's of consequence. I think if she's in Saudi Arabia and he sent her a talaq, then of course she will have to do an Iddah period on that side. I mean, it's got no bearing on the eviction.
Yeah,
she can still proceed with the eviction. She's not living in the house with him. So, yeah, I guess that sorts that out. Faisal, just coming quickly back to the concept of this partnership. What is your advice? And I'm speaking in general now, not just married couples. You know, when people buy a joint property, I mean, you've mentioned a few things. I mean, what do they do? I mean, like maybe it's a brother and a sister, maybe it's friends, you know, they want to buy a property together. And I mean, as always, we urge young people to get into the property market as soon as possible. And sometimes people don't want to get married necessarily, but they also can't afford to buy a property on their own. So we say to people, you know, get into the property market by getting a friend or two or relative and say, like, let's buy something. Can you just take them through the steps?
You know, there's a difference if you're buying property for investment purpose or to flip it, you know, and make some money. So you're entering into a business transaction also with a partner, business partner in that sense. So choose your business partners right if you're going to go into the business of buying and selling property or investing in property. You know, that's the one aspect. So normally we would say, you know, do it rather in a company, register a company, buy the assets.
Yeah,
the
but
assets.
There's bigger tax implications.
There's tax, yeah. So you would do it in your individual names and register both in your names. You know, do an agreement between the two parties to say exactly what is the purpose of this partnership. Also, that deals with the tax issue as far as if your intention is to invest or is your intention to, you know, buy and sell. So that you need to speak to your accountants about that because the tax implication. Then the couple who's obviously going to get married and buy properties together, you know, that's a different aspect. But it's always wise to record things in writing, to say, listen, we're buying it as a family home. This is the responsibility of the husband. This is the responsibility of the wife in respect of this property.
And more particularly, Faisal, when normally like one of the parents, you know, or one of the couple's parents, maybe give them a deposit like, okay, here's 10,000 Rand or 20,000 Rand. And the other one's parents say, okay, I'm going to pay for the renovation, I'm going to build the cupboards, whatever, is to record those things and put a value to it. Because when the divorce happens, then they say, yeah, but we can sell this, but you know, my father must get 50,000 Rand, my mother must get 30,000 Rand. There's no proof of those things at that point in time. So it might, Nazir, when this comment on
that. And unfortunately, you're seeing that more and more often these days, where those specific examples are taking place, and then at the end of the day when the divorce arrives, then you have all these heated disputes and the people end up inevitably in court, where the parents themselves are also dragged in as participants in that process, whether it's willingly or unwillingly. So I agree with you fully. It's better that the contributions are valued and reduced to writing and everybody understands and knows what's going to happen in the event of the dissolution of the marriage or partner.
Yeah, look, you don't get married to get divorced, but the point is, as I said earlier on, you're still tying your camel and you want to you want to do justice. And I mean, when people know these obligations attached to getting divorced, they'll be a lot more reluctant to get divorced and they would want to make that marriage work because it's too much problems. I mean, it's in writing. So in any case, I think that's all we have time for tonight. I really apologize to all those people that sent in all these messages. Try to screenshot all of it and hopefully I can respond to it via the Legal Cafe and so those people mustn't feel disheartened that the queries were not raised tonight. We could only do so much in terms of the time we had.
From Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM.
The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.